This WBEZ podcast is supported by Hacia, whose Executive Fellows Program provides Black and Latinx business owners with real-world tools and strategies needed to master fundamental management concepts related to company stability and growth. Registrants learn through one-on-one executive coaching sessions with subject matter experts in the areas of finance, business development, operations, and legal. More info at haciaworks.org.
This WBEZ podcast is supported by the Chicago Council on Global Affairs, dedicated to increasing knowledge and engagement in the world's most critical issues. On April 24th, the Council is hosting a conversation with New York Times White House and National Security Correspondent David Sanger to discuss his latest book, New Cold Wars, China's Rise, Russia's Invasion, and America's Struggle to Defend the West. Registration for this event is available at globalaffairs.org/events.
From WBEZ Chicago, I'm Suzy Ahn, and this is Reset. Happy Friday. You know the drill. It's time for our weekly news recap. Coming up, cases of monkeypox continue to rise in Illinois.
Rapidly rising monkeypox cases are prompting Governor J.B. Pritzker to take action. He's declaring a state of emergency.
The Highland Park shooting trial continues.
The suspect, who faces 117 charges for allegedly killing seven people at a 4th of July parade, pleaded not guilty on Wednesday.
Lollapalooza staying in Chicago.
The music festival is now under contract for at least the next 10 years with a better deal for the city.
Several prosecutors are leaving the Cook County State's Attorney's Office.
A top prosecutor in the state's attorney's office has abruptly quit, leaving behind a resignation email slamming the office.
So much news this week. Here to help us make sense of it all is WBEZ's state politics reporter, Dave McKinney, Christian Farr, reporter for NBC5 Chicago, Alex Nitkin, editor and City Hall reporter for The Daily Line. Let's start with a growing health crisis. The Illinois Department of Public Health reports at least 603 cases of monkeypox, including the first confirmed case of the virus at the Cook County Jail. On Monday, Governor Pritzker declared monkeypox a public health emergency. Christian, how does that declaration help stop the spread of the virus?
Well, I think when you look at what happened with COVID and, looking at the spread so quickly and how we had to shut down, and we've had previous issues before with, things like the flu, and we haven't seen things shut down this way. So this is really going to help with the emergency because we're number three on the list, meaning that New York and California are above us. And that's going to let more dollars come into the state and more vaccine come into the state as well. We don't want to have that monkeypox spread like we did with COVID, which shut down the city, really hurt us economically, and I think really hurt the psychology of people, not only in the state, not only in the city, but of course across the country and across the world. And we're just recovering from that. And then this next fear is now monkeypox. So with this public health emergency now being declared by the governor and also in the state of New York and also in the state of California, that's going to allow more dollars to come in and more vaccine to come in to try and handle this spread. So it doesn't, I was at 520 the last time I looked at it. And now you're over 600. Yeah. So that's going to be a really big concern.
Yeah, vaccines have definitely been scarce for this. Well, turning to politics, a video of Republican gubernatorial candidate Darren Bailey posted in 2017 on social media is causing a lot of controversy this week. Let's take a listen.
I believe that abortion is one of the greatest atrocities of our day, and I believe it's one of the greatest atrocities probably forever. The attempted extermination of the Jews of World War II, it doesn't even compare on a shadow of the life that has been lost and with abortion since its legalization.
Dave, how's the state Republican Party responding?
Well, Susie, this is the latest, I guess you could say, gaffe on the part of Darren Bailey that has really created difficulties for him on the campaign trail 1 month after the primary election upset of his. Republicans are keeping a distance to these remarks. House Republican Leader Jim Durkin is an exception, and one of his members from up in Crystal Lake, both of whom were critical of this. But by and large, Republicans have been pretty quiet about language that I think is, you listen to it and your jaw kind of hits the floor a little bit. I mean, when you talk about attempted extermination of Jews during the Holocaust, I mean, that language unto itself is inflammatory. It's signs of a broader problem that Bailey has had with Republicans since his election. I mean, by and large, most mainstream Republicans, most sort of household names in the party have not come out and publicly endorsed him. There is wariness about his candidacy, and many of them, you know, are willing, particularly in the collar counties where I think this election is going to be determined. Many of the Republicans out there don't want to talk on the record about this guy, and the ones who do pick up the phone and talk with you for a while are just in utter disbelief at his candidacy and where it's been going.
And how is Bailey responding to this?
Well, on this question, he came out with what I think was an attempt at an apology. I mean, he said that he was, he recognized that the Holocaust is in his words, a human tragedy without parallel. And he said that he wasn't attempting to diminish the atrocities of the Holocaust, but instead was trying to emphasize, in his mind, the tragedy of, in his words, millions of babies being lost.
Well, while Republicans might want to distance themselves from this, I'm sure Democrats have no problem responding to what's been going on. What have you been hearing?
Well, I mean, you know, front and center, I mean, Governor Pritzker has taken this issue and run with it. I mean, his campaign has called Bailey's remarks anti-Semitic, disgusting, disqualifying. And on top of that, they're running an advertisement now, airing Bailey with his own words. I mean, this. Remember, these words came off of Bailey's Facebook page. These are words he put up after former Governor Bruce Rauner signed legislation that infuriated members of the Republican Party that increased access to Medicaid-funded abortions in Illinois. And so Bailey was reacting to that. But again, you know, these kinds of things they become particularly difficult for a candidate that is out trying to move to the middle and influence, independent voters especially, you know, given how abortion now is one of the leading issues. So it's a very difficult situation Bailey is in.
Yeah, well, to that point, Dave, Governor Pritzker spent millions of his own money to ensure Bailey won the Republican primary. Is this exactly what Pritzker was hoping for?
Well, you see this here. You see it across the country where Democrats actually entered primaries and they were spending money to try to sort of enhance the candidacies of people that they regarded as the weakest candidates. And in Bailey, you know, you have a guy who comes from far downstate, doesn't seem to have a lot of traction in Chicago and the collar counties, outside of the core Republican base that he has here. And Pritzker, I think, you know, you're seeing a daily, almost daily onslaught against Bailey. And the big, big issue here of what we have going on is that as of June 30th, Darren Bailey had $364,000 in his campaign fund. And I mean, that sounds, you know, I mean, to an average person, maybe that sounds like a lot of money. But in the world of campaigns, it's nothing. He can't be on television. And so what you have here is that Pritzker, with his kind of bottomless pit campaign fund, since he's a billionaire and self-funding, he's able to be on the air in Chicago constantly.
Yeah.
And to this point, Bailey has not. And we're a month into the general election campaign. And that's really what it's doing is allowing Pritzker to define Bailey to the masses without Bailey having any kind of real response.
Well, sticking with the governor for just a second here, Pritzker also got what he wanted over in the state Democratic Party, where there was a leadership struggle. Dave, what happened there?
Well, this was sort of a byproduct of the power vacuum that resulted when House Speaker Michael Madigan got himself into trouble related to the ComEd situation. He was the longtime chairman of the state Democratic Party of Illinois, but when his problems became so intense, he had to step down from speaker and as party chair. Robin Kelly, the South Suburban congresswoman, took his place at the state party. But she had problems getting the entire, power structure of the state Democratic Party behind her. The criticism against Kelly was that as a federal official, you know, she has certain limitations on her ability to raise money.
Yeah.
And so that was really kind of the arrow that was used against her in this. And what it really kind of became was a bit of a power struggle between Governor Pritzker, who embraced State Representative Elizabeth Lisa Hernandez.
Mm-hmm.
Hernandez is a high-ranking member of leadership in the House Democratic Organization under Speaker Emanuel Welch. and she prevailed. And Kelly had her own supporters, Senator Dick Durbin being one of them. But at the end of the day, the Pritzker really kind of won the day here. And it was really just more of a beauty contest in a way, because, like, you know, most people, the real power in politics in Illinois doesn't rest with who's the chairman of the party, but rather, you know, who's actually in power as governor and senator and what have you. So it was a party struggle within the Democratic Party. Pritzker came out ahead.
Mm-hmm. Well, Alex, another local politician made news this week. Retiring Southside Congressman Bobby Rush had a request for President Biden. Can you fill us in?
Right. Bobby Rush, who was going to be a congressman up until next January. Jonathan Jackson was elected to succeed, or I should say he won the primary and is now expected to win the general election to succeed him. Bobby Rush, now he's kind of taking his last lap in the seat of power after so long in government, and basically sat down with a columnist and asked for – was talking about how he wrote President Joe Biden a letter, was talking to Laura Washington about this at the Tribune, basically asking Biden to pardon Jesse Jackson Jr. and his wife Sandy Jackson. Folks might remember who were here about 10 years ago. They were both convicted in different corruption charges. Jesse Jackson Jr., of course, was the congressman preceding Robin Kelly in the 2nd Congressional District and was really seen as a rising star in the party and in government at that time, sort of before or, you know, Barack Obama was. And his wife Sandy Jackson was alderman of the 7th Ward in South Shore and in the South Side. They were had a scandal in 2012, 2013. They were convicted on charges of for Jesse Jackson Jr., wire fraud, mail fraud, embezzling campaign funds, and Sandy Jackson for filing false income tax returns. And I think it's important to note these were kind of rivals, or at least not on the greatest of terms, of Bobby Rush. And so now he is, you know, especially after Jesse Jackson Jr.'s brother, Jonathan, has won this seat over the Rush had endorsed someone else. Mm-hmm. Rush is trying to sort of reconcile things and ask for grace and to put the whole thing behind everyone.
It's kind of crazy to think that was 10 years ago. This is Reset. I'm Susie on in for Sasha Ann Simons, and we're doing a deep dive on the biggest local and state stories on the weekly news recap. My panel today includes Alex Nitkin, editor and City Hall reporter for The Daily Line, WBEZ state politics reporter Dave McKinney, and NBC5 Chicago reporter Christian Farr. So it's been a tough week at the Cook County State's Attorney's Office. Veteran Assistant State's Attorney James Murphy resigned last Friday with tough words for his boss. Several more prosecutors have recently announced they're calling it quits, too. Christian, what is going on over in Kim Fox's office?
You know, it's a big, big shakeup. I mean, we've heard about this for some time now, and there's a question of leadership. I've interviewed James Murphy many times over the years. He's had a lot of the top cases at Cook County. Now he's a former ASA, and part of his letter wrote that, "I would love to continue the fight for the victims of crime and continue to stand with each of you, especially in the face of overwhelming crime that is crippling our communities. However, I can no longer work for this administration. I have zero confidence in their leadership." He just does not have faith in, unfortunately, the leadership of Kim Fox. Of course, we know that Kim Fox has had quite a few issues in that office, especially with the Jussie Smollett case and how that was handled, and other high-profile police-involved shooting cases that that many people were hoping that she would end up charging police officers in that case. Those cases did not end up happening. So I'm not certain what this means for the future of her office. She has responded in her own statement, and she said, "We recognize the rigors of this difficult work and told that it bears yet more than 1,100 employees show up every day to work on the front lines and behind the scenes, and a testament of the resiliency and spirit of this office." So Kim Fox still feeling confident about the staff that she does have, but having James Murphy walk away, who's been there for a very long time, we see him on TV quite often, hear him on the radio quite often. To see him step away from these big cases is kind of shocking.
Yeah, definitely. Well, Alex, our journalism colleagues over at Block Club Chicago and Injustice Watch published some alarming data this week involving black drivers and traffic stops. What did they find?
Yeah, this was a really great and impressive investigation between Block Club and Injustice Watch. They essentially took they were looking at traffic stops, specifically the racial disparities in traffic stops. I think that the context had already been laid out. We saw this pretty striking Inspector General's report last year that showed there was already a really wide racial disparity in how the police are treating people at traffic stops. And what the folks at Block Club and Injustice Watch did was really smart. They basically looked at the number of traffic stops that the Chicago Police Department is reporting to the state every year under a state law, trying to sort of track the police department for the purposes of reforms, and they contrasted it with the police department's own records, where they had shown incidences of people who are being charged with gun crimes and traffic citations in the same incident, and they basically found a huge gulf between the two. The implication here being that the Chicago Police Department is just not tracking, they're not reporting all of the times that they are stopping drivers, pulling them over, seizing their guns, charging them. I think that there are a lot of you know, takeaways and things to look at from this. But two takeaways in my mind are, one, that, you know, when we hear David Brown, the superintendent of the Chicago Police Department, really emphasizing how many guns officers are taking off the street, like that is the real metric for how safe we should feel. And this article leads with, I think, a pretty typical story of a man who owns a gun. He has it legally, he says, for his own protection. And the officer takes it and seizes it and charges him with unlawful use of a weapon, because the UUW, you can be charged with use of a weapon even if you just possess it. It really raises some questions of all of these gun seizures, how many of them are just, you know, police who are pressured to pull people over. I think the other thing is that you really can't. It's such a hindrance to the ongoing work of trying to reform the police department and build trust in them if we don't even know what they're doing and how much they're actually pulling people over. So this, I think, was really alarming and is going to be sort of a wake-up call for the folks in Springfield who are pushing for this reform in the first place and going to try to put more pressure on the police department to get their data recording and reporting act together a little bit better.
Well, before we take a quick break, Christian, we must mention a story you did this week about the passing of a trailblazing black actress with local roots.
Yeah, Nichelle Nichols. My father was a pilot in the United States Air Force, loved Nichelle Nichols, 89 years old, would have been 90 later this year, from South Suburban Robbins, and was discovered by Duke Ellington, wow, of all people. But I think one of the most interesting things about her is that when she was on Star Trek, Gene Roddenberry had come to her, really wanted her on there. They wanted this diverse show. You have to remember, this is the 1960s, to have people of different ethnicities on a television show who are equal was absolutely amazing and groundbreaking. But she was really into Broadway. She was into singing. And she wanted to leave that show after the first season, actually resigned and bumped into Dr. Martin Luther King Jr., who told her that he was a huge fan of the show and said that her position on that show was so very, very important, especially to the civil rights movement at that time, that she went back to Gene Roddenberry and said, hey, if you'll take me back, I'd like to continue on this show. And as we know, if you are a fan of Star Trek, she stayed on that show and did tons of movies up until, I think, the late 80s, early 90s. You know, unfortunately, I believe she had a stroke, dementia set in, and had a rough couple of years, but left behind a legacy, and a legacy that's going to be celebrated in Robbins at some point, maybe name a street after her or something like that. But it's a sad passing, but a wonderful journey through life.
Yeah, and one of the first interracial kisses on television.
Yes,
so, you know, not just for the Trekkies, for everyone. Okay, so far we talked about Governor J.B. Pritzker declaring monkeypox a public health emergency and the governor's Republican challenger finding himself under fire for an old social media post. But there's much more to get to. Dave, as families began thinking about school again, we learned that an influential charter school leader, Tim King, has had to step down. What do we know?
Well, Susie, our colleague Sarah Karp has been all over this story this week and has done extensive reporting about it. I mean, King has gotten a fair amount of notoriety because of his efforts at Urban Prep Academies. It's a charter school network that he founded. And it was celebrated nationally for getting 100% of the school's all-black male student population into college. And, you know, as a result, that fame, I guess you could call it, sort of trickled down onto King himself. He was identified by People magazine as a hero of the year. But as the lead-in here mentioned, there was a Chicago Public Schools Inspector General's report that indicated that there was some inappropriate physical activity between him and a student at the school, and that was being investigated. And of course, King sort of, you know, he left his post under unclear circumstances initially in the week, and then word of this report trickled out. So yeah. So it really kind of forced him out, and has unfortunately put a tarnish on Urban Prep and what, you know, the good things that have happened over there.
Yeah, I'm sure we'll hear more as that continues to unfold. Well, on a lighter school story, the back-to-school sales tax holiday kicks off today. Christian, what are the details there?
Yeah, that's going to be a 10-day sales tax holiday on a number of items for shoppers. Of course, we're getting ready for back-to-school, so this is going to help a lot of families. And it's going to be a 10-day holiday that's going to go until the 14th, and we're going to see the rate go from 6.25 to 1.25. So that's going to really help families. There's a bunch of qualifying purchases, which includes certain clothing items, footwear, with the retail selling price being less than $125 per item, and of course eligible school supplies as well. But this is, of course, a part of Pritzker's budget that kicked in on July 1st, and this is really helpful, again, yeah, for families. There's a quote in here from a state senator saying, you know, as a nod to our working parents, guardians, and teachers in Illinois, lowering the tax rate on school supplies removes a burden when preparing for the academic year, and we always hear about people struggling here in Illinois with our high property taxes and just, you know, overall taxes, period. Mm-hmm. And so hopefully this will help people and will be something that will be permanent, that we will see the sales tax holiday that will happen on an annual basis.
Yeah. Well, let's turn to something completely different. Lollapalooza. It brought hundreds of thousands to Chicago's Grant Park last weekend, and it looks like the show will go on for at least a decade. Alex, what are the details?
That's right. 10 to 15 years, potentially, with a 5-year extension option. Basically, at the end of Lolla on Sunday night this week, Mayor Lori Lightfoot made a sort of surprise appearance up on stage, and she said, hey, guess what? Lolla's going to be here for another 10 years. And a cry of joy went up from teenagers all over Naperville. But I mean, all kidding aside, this is something that, you know, it's a huge economic draw and engine to the city. And, you know, getting teenagers from Naperville is literally the best thing that the city can do in some sense. It's money from somewhere else dropped into the middle of the city. So basically, the terms of this are pretty similar to the way that it has been. The Chicago Park District will take between 5 and 20% of the revenue, depending on how successful the festival is. The city is guaranteed at least $2 million. And last year, it generated about $7.8 million for the Chicago Park District. So for all the you know, us in the city, some of us might turn up our nose at all the noise and everything,
the
and
traffic.
The traffic and the trash. I mean, here it's Friday, and I feel like they're still cleaning up after it.
Yeah.
But, you know, in raw terms, it's sort of hard to argue that this is, you know, it's a major draw in tourism. Event and something that the city is a real claim to fame, a major music
yeah,
festival. It would
definitely
certainly be bigger news if Lolla weren't still going.
Right. And it's not just teens from Naperville, teens from other states too. So.
Sure.
Well, Christian, there was another Lollapalooza story. It involved a security guard falsely reporting a mass shooting threat. What happened there?
Yeah, this is really disappointing. So a Lolla security guard wanted to get off work early, wanted to go home, and so sent a text to her supervisor saying that, quote, mass shooting at 4 p.m. location, Lollapalooza, we have 150 targets.
Wow.
Of course, that supervisor didn't take that lightly. If anybody remembers, the Las Vegas shooter had
yeah.
looked at Lollapalooza as a possible site. So, and we just had Highland Park happen
yeah.
on July 4th. So this is something that's going to be taken very seriously at an event like Lollapalooza. So you know, the Chicago Police Department was notified, the FBI notified. But through an investigation, they figured out that this was all made up. And it was really never posted to social media. She just showed that text to her supervisor. But police and federal investigators were quick enough to figure out that this was not an actual threat. She has been charged in this case, had a $50,000 bond, has electronic monitoring. But you're 18 years old and doing something like this on your permanent record, not something that you really want just to get out of work early.
Yeah, for sure. Well, turning from that to another Grant Park event, NASCAR has the green light. And buckle up for some more puns. Alex, some aldermen are pretty revved up. Catch us up to speed on that.
Yes. So this was kind of a surprise announcement from Mayor Lightfoot a couple of weeks ago, basically saying, you know, it kind of leaked out in drips and drabs first and was sort of coming into to focus. And then she came out very proudly and said, yeah, NASCAR is coming to Chicago. They're going to shut down a part of Grant Park at some point, basically between the end of June and early July. Some of the first reaction to this, like you said, was from the downtown alder people, Brendan Riley, Sophia King, and Pat Dowell, who acknowledged that, you know, they didn't technically need to be told about this legally. They were pretty miffed about the idea that NASCAR is going to have control of, you know, basically all of Grant Park. We're talking about Roosevelt to Randolph and Michigan to Lakeshore Drive. That's the whole area. From I think it's like June 20. I'm trying to look up the June 22nd to July 5th. So literally over 4th of July. But Lightfoot was trying to sort of calm things down and say, well, just so you know, this isn't, you know, they're not going to have the entire thing blocked off the whole time. It's more like they're going to be blocked off during the actual event. And then the 2-week period is mostly just set up and clean up, like we're seeing with some of the residual traffic from Lala, that kind of thing. You know, Brendan Riley was also complaining that if the mayor had spoken more with aldermen, maybe we could have gotten a better deal for the city. I mean, it's not like the city is necessarily paying anything except giving up all of this public space for the peak of the summer. But, you know, we just mentioned that Lollapalooza made $7.8 million last year. This NASCAR race, by contrast, will just have, I think, a $500,000 permit fee. This is from the Sun-Times, plus commissions on concession and $2 per admission ticket sold. So not as much. And Lightfoot is just trying to tell everyone, hey, calm down. This is a good thing. It's more people from outside spending money in the city. And, of course, people who live and represent those folks who live downtown, maybe not so pleased.
We'll have to see how that goes. This is Reset. I'm Susie on in for Sasha Ann Simons. And we're going behind the headlines on the weekly news recap. My panel today includes Alex Nitkin, editor and City Hall reporter for The Daily Line, NBC5 Chicago reporter Christian Farr, and WBEZ state politics reporter Dave McKinney. We're going to move from the city to the suburbs, where a bakery in Lake in the Hills, about 40 miles northwest of Chicago, has been making headlines, all because of a family-friendly drag show. Dave, what happened there?
Well, it's a business called Uprising Bakery, and they've created a buzz in the community there because they have these entertaining drag brunch breakfasts. And I don't know if you've been to one of those, but they are highly entertaining. I haven't been to one out there, but I was out with my family
fun.
To one. They're hilarious. Well, at any rate, the result there was a person who vandalized this business. They spray painted homophobic graffiti. Had windows and a door smashed there, and Lake in the Hills was trying to mitigate this issue in some way, but it kind of flew up in their face. They were trying to block this bakery from holding future events like that. But the ACLU has stepped in and has reached an agreement with the bakery and has backed off from that threat of fines, and Uprising can basically move ahead and do what it was always intending to do. You know, basically the ACLU got involved because they were saying, you know, you can't allow these entities out there that are trying to stop businesses like this. You can't let that go unanswered because you know, that's a violation of free speech of the folks here at Uprising Bakery. So for the meantime, the people running the bakery and the show there have the green light to go ahead and do what they're doing.
And they've had other events as well, just, you know, live music, painting, baking classes. So not just the drag brunch. Christian, in the northern suburb of Northbrook, protesters gathered to support Rocky the Coyote. Can you tell us about him?
Yeah, Rocky the Coyote. So this has been going on for some time. Rocky the Coyote is in a preserve, Cook County Forest Preserve in Northbrook. And Rocky is a domesticated coyote. He was born, and they initially thought he was a dog. They thought he was a dog when he was born. And so then they discovered he was a coyote, but now he has no fear of people whatsoever. So he's been in this forest preserve for a little more than 4 years, and he's in a cage. And so animal rights activists do not want him in this cage. They want to send him to an animal refuge in Colorado where he would be able to be with animals that would be sort of like-minded. And so he just can't go out with regular coyotes because he hasn't been raised that way. He's almost been raised like a dog. And so they're very much against the fact that he's in this cage. Cook County wants to build a bigger cage for him. They say he's fine. He's treated very well. But they think that the winters are harsh. This is the animal rights activists. The winters are too harsh here in Chicago, and they can be. And he's in that cage, and they think he's stressed out. And so there's sort of this back and forth. And the other day, they went to Cook County President Tony Preckwinkle's office and had a protest out in front demanding to have a one-on-one meeting with her. Somebody did come out. Her deputy chief of staff came out, greeted them, and said he would pass their concerns on to them. But really, this has kind of been shifted to how the Cook County Forest Preserve is responding. And they say that Rocky is fine, that they have the best experts who have looked at Rocky and say that he is okay. But these activists are not backing down. They're going to keep fighting to have a meeting with Tony Preckwinkle and try to get Rocky sent to Colorado instead of staying here in Northbrook.
Well, let's head down the road to Highland Park for the big news of the week. And the alleged shooter of the July 4th parade shooting pleaded not guilty this week. Christian, what's the latest there?
Yeah, 117 criminal charges. As we know, he was already charged with the deaths, but these now include even more charges for those deaths and also for the 48 other people who were injured in that shooting. We know that happened on July 4th, right as this parade in Highland Park was about to begin. And so his parents were actually in court when he pleaded not guilty. They did not speak to the media, but they had an attorney there with them by the name of George Gomez, and he said that his parents are still devastated by what had occurred on July 4th. He added they are in shock. In hindsight, they deeply regret the actions their son had taken. They are part of the Highland Park community, mm-hmm. and they're heartbroken by all those affected by this tragic event, and they're here to express their sorrows. Of course, you know, people are still reeling over this. They're still trying to understand why this happened. There was a manhunt that happened after this. You know, he drove into Wisconsin. There was a possibility that he may have taken part, was going to take part in a mass shooting there because he still had a rifle on him inside of that car. So he didn't speak much during that court proceeding, basically said yes, was respectful to the judge. But we'll have to wait and see how this is all going to end up playing out. Will he end up pleading guilty at some point? Will there be some sort of plea deal not to have to put these families through a long trial? You know, but right now, everybody's hurting on both sides of this, including his parents and including the victims in this case.
Yeah, definitely. Well, we are still very much in the summer season, and O'Hare is seeing the benefits of summer travel. Dave, how's the airport's post-COVID recovery going?
Well, I mean, anybody who's been out there, you've noticed, unlike with the pandemic when it was a ghost town, I mean, there are people out there again. There's new data from the Federal Aviation Administration for the first 6 months of this year that shows an uptick of 22% in flight operations out at O'Hare, which means that O'Hare is busy again. I mean, you're standing in line at Frontera Grill again if you're out there, you know. So, but you know, basically it puts O'Hare in second place in terms of the busiest airports in the U.S. behind Atlanta and slightly ahead of Dallas-Fort Worth. One of the interesting things that was happening during the pandemic was that east-west traffic, there was a bit of a slowdown. I mean, we are a big connecting hub mm-hmm. for airlines across the country. And as the pandemic eased, north-south travel picked up again, and so that helped nudge this up. And then plus Southwest Airlines is operating now out of O'Hare, which has also helped boost numbers there. And numbers were up at Midway as well, so the airports are back in business.
All right. Well, as we wrap up here, what stories are on all of your radars in the week ahead? Alex?
I am looking ahead to budget season. I think that everything is pretty chill right now. That's one thing. I got to say, I'm also looking at which alderman is going to shock us all next by saying that they won't run for re-election. We already saw Tom Tunney saying he's sort of wavering. So that's what I'm looking at, too.
What about you, Christian?
You know, I'm always on search for a story idea, but one of the ones that I actually did this week that was really kind of interesting, if you've caught the HBO, The Janes documentary, it's a really interesting thing before Roe v. Wade. And now that Roe v. Wade has been overturned, The Janes are coming back. There's a Southside activist by the name of Tamara Manassa, who is also fighting against violence in the city of Chicago. She's rebooting The Janes to help people in places where abortion is banned, to try and help them get abortions in other states as well. So, you know, it was rough back then in the 1970s, late 60s. It could equally be as rough here because people are very passionate about the abortion issue.
Dave?
You know, I think on the state campaign trail, the Pritzker-Bailey campaign is heating up. I mean, you know, as we mentioned earlier in the show, it's going to be fascinating to watch. You know, where is Darren Bailey going to get money? And I think that's something that's ever present. And in order for him to have a viable campaign, he's got to be raising more than, you know, $1,000 a pop. And so I'll be watching that, watching the state Supreme Court campaigns. There are two big races in our general area here that could dictate whether Republicans step in and take control of the state Supreme Court after decades of Democratic rule. So both those elections are things that I have my eye on.
All right. And before we go, Alex, today's your last day at the Daily Line.
That's
but
right.
We'll still be seeing you, hopefully, on the weekly news recap because you're still going to be covering Chicago government, but now you'll be doing it for the Better Government Association.
That's right. Yeah. August 15th will be my first day there, and I'm excited to get started, although I'll miss the Daily Line dearly. Today is my last day there. It's also the 3-year anniversary of my first day, coincidentally, so I get to round it out. And I'm definitely not going to stop covering, you know, a lot of the same stuff, city, state government, and Cook County as well. So, yeah, I'm excited.
All right. Well, congratulations.
Thank you very much.
That's it for today's Reset. Stick with this podcast for the week's other top stories. We drop a new episode every weekday afternoon, sometimes on the weekends, too. Plus, you can now watch the weekly news recap on the WBEZ Facebook and YouTube pages. Check it out. I'm Susie Yon, in for Sasha Ann Simons. Thanks for spending your time with us. Have a great weekend.
At a time when information continues to come at us faster and faster, sometimes you need to hit pause and rewind. NPR's Throughline takes you back in time to the source of the news stories filling your feed. Find NPR's Throughline wherever you get your podcasts.